Entertainment is dying. It's being replaced by dopamine culture. I'm going to talk about what that means and why it matters a lot. And more importantly, what to do about it so that you can really start enjoying actual entertainment and real life as God intended. Today on The Chris Stefanik Show. Welcome to The Chris Stefanik Show. We are here every week to give you the tools and inspiration you need to live your everyday life with joy, even when life gets crazy. Missionaries of Joy, thank you. It's because of you that we're able to do what we're doing. Click below, become a Missionary of Joy, and make this great work happen. This episode is sponsored in part by EWTN. You can catch this and so much more on EWTN Plus streaming. Link is below in the show notes. And if you want to come on an experience with me where you dive into real life, I regularly lead pilgrimages. I'm leading one to Kauai. We're going to call that a, quote, pilgrimage to beauty, an immersion in real life and real beauty in the place my wife had her conversion experience. We'll link to that in the show notes. Today, we're going to talk about diving into real life with a friend, a deacon, a university president, and a real-life cowboy, president of Wyoming Catholic College, Deacon Kyle Washit. Deacon Kyle, what a joy to have you here, great. Man. I was so honored and blown away doing the commencement last year for Wyoming Catholic.
Oh, it was amazing to have you, Chris. It was just great.
No, but there's so much striking about the kids there. It's like it's really unlike any other place, you know, and it's almost a selling point to say this is not for everyone.
That's right. That's
but if
right.
this is for you, do not miss this.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I was at a wedding several years ago of a kid who graduated from there, and they're doing their wedding dance. And I'm filming it like every, quote, normal person does today with my phone. And I look around, and there's all these young adults, and it was like the 90s. They're just standing there with their hands at their sides, smiling and watching what's happening and experiencing. I'm like, what is going on here? Did I just step in a time machine? And they're Wyoming Catholic grads. They're like, they're detoxed.
That's right. Yeah, it's just not Eden, but it's the 90s, which is, you know, closer.
Which is...
Yeah.
That should be the tag. 15 years closer to Eden.
Yeah, that's right.
Or wait, no, it's not.
At this point, 30,
it's not 15, 30 years 30 closer years to Eden. Oh, man, dude. We're going to be dead so
oh,
soon.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah.
Man. You've written and spoken a lot about a cultural crisis that that no one is talking about. Because I think people see some shifts happening and they presume it's kind of benign, but it's indicative of serious problems. And it's the death of... the entertainment culture as we know it. I want to take a quick moment here to ask you something really important. What's the best investment you can make with your life? I believe it's investing in people, investing in their joy, their faith, and their eternal destiny. That's what we do every single day at Real Life Catholic, and I want to invite you to be a part of it. Right now, our Missionaries of Joy, our monthly supporters, are helping change lives. Because of them, children are coming back to the church, marriages are being strengthened, and the gospel is literally reaching millions. But we're just getting started. Guys, there's so much more to do, and we cannot do it without you. When you become a Missionary of Joy, you're not just supporting a ministry, you're stepping into a mission. And you're not just donating, you're actually making this mission possible. You are helping us bring hope, truth, and joy to a world that desperately needs it. And that's not all. As a Missionary of Joy, you get exclusive access to all our video series, including Living Joy, Rise, Renewed, Fearless, and more. You get exclusive early access to new releases. You get Monday motivation texts direct from me. And you get access to our daily anchor, daily inspiration to fuel your faith. All that for the same price as a lunch at Chipotle. The world needs more people who are willing to say yes to making a difference. Will you be one of them? Spell that out. What's happening and why should it scare people?
Right.
With a healthy fear.
So you think about culture and what cultures do to relax and engage. And there's sort of three levels of it. One is what we call the traditional slow culture. And that's where you go to plays, you watch film, you listen and perform live music, you're playing sports, you know, this great. And already when we shift into an entertainment culture, you know, that there was all this concern about entertaining ourselves to death, right? But the entertainment culture is already a more passive reaction. Instead of going to play baseball, we watch professionals play baseball, right? Instead of listening and making our own music, we're going to buy an album and listen to it. And even then, that's all right, right? That's the culture we grew up in. Increasingly, though, what we're realizing is we're not even doing that. We're in what Ted Joy, as a culture critic, he calls it the dopamine culture, where what we're doing is not entertainment. We're not sitting and watching a film or even a TV series. Now we're going to watch a 30-second clip on my reel, and then I'm going to go to the next 30-second clip and the next 30-second clip and the next 30-second clip. And I'll spend an hour and a half, but it's not doing an engaged, intense hour and a half moment like if I watched a great film. Instead, I've got these short little attention spans. And I don't even watch sports anymore. Now I'm going to bet on what the first pitch is going to be. Wow. Or I'm going to gamify everything because the attention span's this short. So we need quick, short feedback loops of engagement. And that's what recreation is. And increasingly, that's becoming normative, so much normative that the average 17 to 24-year-old is spending something like 7 to 8 hours on their screen a day just doing these short, quick feedback loop dopamine entertainment things. But it's not deep entertainment. It's the closest analogy we might say is you can go out to a meal. You can do a major formal fine dining multiple courses thing. You say that's a rare thing, but you can do that.
Yeah.
Then there's the family meal where you sit down and you eat together. And then there's just like junk food all day, every day, and you eat and you never sit down and eat at a table because you're just snacking on junk food all day and your taste buds rewire. That's the situation we're at for cultural entertainment.
You know, I've heard a lot of people complain about use of the cell phone, and we can do that all day.
Right.
And this angle is really new because this isn't just pointing out the problem of the quantity, but the quality. I mean, if you're watching a screen for 3 hours, but it's the Lord of the Rings,
right,
or Braveheart, or something really that's art, it's really beautiful. That's not necessarily bad,
right?
It's the junk food quality of it all,
yeah.
And you do see it. I mean, even the entertainment industry, like the amount of things being produced that are substantive and long, the money, you can see the future. It's going to fall out on the whole thing.
Right. There's in fact,
be left with TikTok.
Yeah, exactly, right? And it's designed deliberately because, in fact, you get more engagement when you have short, repeatable pleasure bursts than if you require someone to stay engaged for an extended period of time on one theme.
Mm.
Now, the thing is that, for us as humans, that's when we hit it. Deep restorative place. When you watch a beautiful film for 3 hours, then there's something really powerful happening in your soul. If you spend 3 hours watching 30-second sound bites, you're just drained.
What's it doing to us? I mean, and you're getting these kids that they're spit out on the other side of Wyoming Catholic going to a wedding and looking at it with their eyes.
Right.
Unlike me. You're getting them on the front end coming out of this, and you see a radical shift in
these
kids. So what's the problem? There's going to be people watching like, well, you know, what's the big deal? I just want to unwind, but that's how I do it every single day. How is it hurting?
Right, yeah, this is part of the challenge, right? At some level, you're worried about sounding like an old man to the kids. Hey, entertainment's not like it was in my day.
Knock it
off. Like, no, but something actually fundamental is getting rewired. Humans have an ability to give their attention to things in a way that animals don't. Animals are sort of driven by instinct to pay attention. Like there's a threat or there's food or there's, you know, whatever. They have to pay attention on a survival basis. Humans choose what to give their attention to. We can choose to be attentive. We can choose to, you know, turn our eyes and lock eyes with someone and be present to them. But that's a finite quality. that it's a, both a finite quality and a finite quantity of attention that you have during the day. And if you don't practice it and you use it up on short things, you're less capable of giving it to the things that matter, which we're seeing at the level of interpersonal relationship. The number of young people that are able to sit there and have a real sustained conversation without checking their phone is really limited. And in fact, they're studying that you probably can't go 5 minutes without checking your phone if you're not really, really engaged. Now, or the problem of even now when you go to watch the movie, the number of people who are scrolling on their phone while watching a movie, right? The double screen entertainment, because the sustained attention isn't enough. You say, okay, so what's wrong with that? Well, we're made for communion, but communion, personal communion, requires attention, requires investment. Restoration of us as persons requires communion, requires investment. And if you find that you're only able to give 30 seconds of your attention before you need something new, all of a sudden, you're now not a consumer even. You're an addict. You're looking for the next hit. And if you're looking for the next hit, you're not giving yourself to a thing in self-gift and attention. You are running frantically for the next buzz, and the people who are producing this kind of entertainment want that because it drives engagement, is how they call it, which allows them to sell advertising, which allows them to keep your eyes on the screen more, but in a way that's detrimental to community, to thought, to prayer, to any number of those things that we as humans are made to do.
Real art, like whether it's movie or a painting, requires that you bring something to the experience. It's and the ability to bring it is it requires practice, right? Did you read The World Outside Your Head?
No.
Great book, but the author makes the case that we've lost the ability to assign value to things. The things that we say, this is important, I'm therefore going to focus on this thing.
Right.
And it's assigned for us. You know, and here's where a consumerist culture and a leftist deconstructionist culture merge, and it's like a perfect storm. Well, there is no inherent value to things, and I want to sell you things.
Right. And now I'm like the dog that is unable to choose what I give my attention to. Yeah. I have to give my attention to the thing that has the instinctive response.
Yeah.
And so now I've got a consumerist culture that's dialed into that, and I have to give my attention here. It's not a free act of personal communion, of reflection, which is what we were made for in the garden. Mm. It instead is I'm reduced to a kind of animal instinct response, and it never dials into those deeper needs.
And we kind of sense this. Like most people who are going to hear this say, yeah, I do that. I kind of hate it about myself.
Right.
Maybe the entertainment industry is aware of this. I'm not sure if they're sounding the alarms like they should be.
Right.
The people who make movies, I don't know if are they aware that this is actually literally crowding them out. The fact that they have to put their movie into 1,000 sound bites to draw attention to the movie as advertising is killing their future ability and market wherein they'll make movies, right? So we kind of sense this, and yet no one seems to have the strength or will to say, okay, let's stop. Why is that that thing that we all kind of see and dislike about ourselves inevitably, it seems like it's inevitably, aside from small pockets which you're creating, replacing entertainment. Like this is a march that seems like I could be a mosquito flying at an 18-wheeler to try to slow it down. It's, you know, why is it winning?
So I think there's two things. One, there is a deliberate addictive quality to this, right?
Yep.
When you look at the studies that were done for social media and the studies that were done for creating this environment in which we're in, they studied addiction. They studied the things that made gambling addicts. They studied the things that, you know, attracted humans and got them stuck, and they tried to put that in to the structure of the digital culture that we live in. Like it was deliberately made to be a consuming, addictive, repetitive thing because they knew it would drive engagement. So at one level, like we're dealing with a drug that was designed to trick us. So that's the first thing. But the other thing is there's a cultural attitude that we all have, which is, I can't complain about this. That there's a sense of progress is inevitably good. That if I'm complaining about this, I sound like the grumpy guy that was complaining about the invention of the car. Or I'm the guy that was complaining about the invention of electric light or something, right? They're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Like, this is just what society does. We make things better. We make things faster and we go forward. And so one of the byproducts is that this is how we do things now. And I think that's a lie. And that's a lie that is partly being told to us by the people who have made these addictive modes of interacting. That what we need to do, and it's hard to do because it's so consuming. You're in an environment where it's consuming, where entertainment's constantly being replaced and you don't know it.
Mm.
But you need to have a moment of stepping back and saying, wait, what is real human leisure?
Mm.
What are those kind of moments when I feel refreshed? What are those memories I have from those long gone days of the 90s of going and watching a movie with my friends in the movie theater, right? Like, what are we doing there? And to be able to step back from that requires, I think, a kind of Herculean effort.
It does.
Because both the culture, the system's designed to be addictive, and we're told it's bad to be critical of it.
You know, what addiction does is spits out on the other side people who are kind of zombified. And you could see this in the faces of young people.
Yeah.
You know, they come into your door kind of like that. Like any university, right. They're showing up like that. What's happening? It's like we're losing the ability to enjoy actual entertainment. We're not just forgetting to watch a good movie. We're losing the ability to have to experience the pleasure entertainment's supposed to bring us.
Well, exactly, right? So that's the problem, right? If you say, okay, if someone's grown up at this point just watching reels of Lord of the Rings. If Lord of the Rings has been reduced to 30-second clips that are interspersed with various things for you on TikTok, and then you're like, okay, now we're going to watch the extended cut.
Yeah.
This is going to be awesome. It's going to blow your mind. They're going to find out they can't actually watch it for that long.
Mm.
Right? It doesn't have the dopamine hit. And then you're going to be trying to convince them, no, this is really much better.
Yeah.
Again, going back to the analogy of eating. You know, if you have someone who's lived on gummy bears all day, every day,
yeah.
You're like, hey, I'm going to take you out. We're going to have this multi-course, fine dining steak dinner. Like, actually, this is not.
I just want more gummy worms.
Yeah, go on.
Actually, I'm thinking more even in terms of the, just the dopamine not even working anymore. Even
for the kids having lots of gummy bears.
After a while, it's just like I'm not even tasting them anymore. Gummy bears, it falls apart because I'm always going to taste gummy bears. They're wonderful.
No, that's right. That is the real. The real problem, right? That with any addiction, all of a sudden what was giving you the hit doesn't give you the hit anymore. So not only are you numbed to like good food, but yeah, you said you're numbed to the gummy bears. And then you have to start creating things to cover up for that. Right? And I feel like at least part of the AI revolution is intended to do that, right? Oh, shoot. Let me have something that does my thinking and my writing for me.
Yeah.
So that I can then figure out, and then that AI itself can start generating new engagement stuff. And because I need so much more dopamine hit, I need some kind of computer program that can generate
even more.
More and more and more slop.
And that's not even gonna work after a while.
It's not gonna work after a while. And then I'm just gonna, but what else do I do? And then I'm an addict, I'm there. I'm a junkie.
It literally is that zombified experience. I felt it myself. The times that I'm over scrolling and everything becomes bite-sized, instead of pursuing a book, real music, poetry, whatever it is,
right.
A good movie, I feel, I can almost see the vacancy enter my eyes.
Right.
Like even those things stop doing it for me.
And so I'll start scrolling faster.
Yeah.
But I don't stop. I'm just going to start scrolling faster.
The hedonic adaptation or whatever we call that, right?
And then it's this loop, right?
Mm.
And that as a marketer, that's a win, right? Mm. Because they're going to watch and they're going to click on the ad because they're looking for something new.
So why does the university president care so much about this?
So
what's this have to do with academia? I mean, why can't the kids just read their books and then scroll on their phones and everybody be happy.
Fair enough. So I think the first thing to remember is the reason the Catholic Church cares about education is because we care about saving souls. So that even when we think about the academy, the church is concerned about the academy because it sees it in some way as a step for the sanctification, as a spiritual work of mercy. And so the first question is, all right, why do we care about this? At some level, it's because it prevents that essential spiritual work of mercy of education that is intended to save souls. And it's in one sense not new. When Adam and Eve fall, the first thing they do is they make fig leaves. And you think, well, what's wrong with fig leaves? And Irenaeus says they responded too harshly to the harshness of the fall. And what he means by that, and I think, is what do the fig leaves do? The fig leaves camouflage them.
Wow.
They make it look like they're still in the garden externally, even though internally they're already not in the garden. They look like they belong in the garden. They're plants.
Dang.
They fit, right?
Wow.
And it hides their need for healing. It hides their need for education. And so in some level, fig leaves are the first technocracy. The first work of human activity.
The fig leaf outfit is the first technocracy.
Right. It's the first technocracy, right? I want to hide my vulnerability. I want to hide my brokenness, and I want to camouflage and distract from the fact that I'm not in relationships by making myself the kind of thing that's not capable of being in relationships. Wow. I'm a plant.
It's profound, man.
So when I think about what's education? Education at its peak, Christian education at its peak, is meant to put people in relationship to reality, in those relationships that were broken at the fall. The relationship with yourself, the relationship with the natural world, the relationship with other people, and the relationship with God. And that authentic education is using that instrument of relation we have, our mind, and forming it to be connected to the truth, to the beauty, to the goodness, to other persons. And so if we have a system that is camouflaging us, closing us off from that, which is what I think we have in the dopamine culture, we have a system that's preventing authentic relationship and therefore preventing authentic education.
Wow.
And that's the issue. I think every educational establishment is going to have to wrestle with this, that we have people that are increasingly incapable of being educated because, not because they're dumb, but because education requires vulnerable relationship, and we're camouflaging ourselves from that.
So what do you do at Wyoming Catholic? And I ask this not just as a sales pitch to Wyoming Catholic. Not that you would mind making this entire show a sales
pitch
to Wyoming
Catholic.
Right? It's just a phenomenal place. But like I really, for my own life right now, as a guy who's well beyond the college years, And for anybody who's like, what do we do? I mean, you really successfully break people out of that with unexpected things, right? People go to college, they think this is going to be the academic experience, that's it.
Right.
Well, you got serious academics there, but like there's a whole other part. I go like this, but maybe the other part's like this much. I mean, it's stand out. So the human formation is academia and gymnasia?
Yeah, that's right.
What happens?
So I think
here, save me.
Yeah. So I think it is true that this is, I think, an important thing. Universities, colleges are places that model cultural responses. And so it's not just for the people who come to them, but for they create ripple effects in the wider culture. So I think it is, in fact, something that we are very aware that we're doing something for the group of kids that come to us, but we're also doing something that we hope has a ripple effect in the culture. And that, I think, is what we're actually dialing into is a version of what the church has always done in responding to the concern about fig leaves. What does God do when Adam and Eve are in fig leaves? He sends them out into the wilderness. He says, I'm going to send you to a place of education to prepare you for the coming of the Savior, right? And the wilderness is, in one sense, hard, in one sense, challenging. And in another sense, that's the place of encounter. That's the place of education. And so throughout church history, salvation history, that's been the model of education. Go out into the wilderness as a place of education, as a place of modeling. What that looks like here for us is at some level, the same steps that we see in the Desert Fathers in the history of Christian education. First a fast, and then an engagement with the wilderness. The fast is what allows you to encounter the wilderness. Mm. So what's that look like in a digital age? Well, for our students, it's fairly radical. They don't use their phone the entire time they're at Wyoming Catholic. They show up, they check their phone in, and they don't have it until they leave at the end of the semester.
That's intense.
And we then have no internet in the dorms, and we have restrictions on where we're doing screens on the rest of the campus.
Wow.
Why? As a fast, as a first break.
Wow.
But that's not enough. I used to do confirmation retreats, and in a former life, I was a balloon animal maker.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And so
phenomenal. I'm going to guess in your current life, you privately do that.
Yeah, that's right. I have six kids, so it's still pretty good entertainment, right? Yeah,
that's right. That's awesome.
So
who are you bringing balloons next time?
That's right. So I'd do these confirmation retreats, and I would fill these long balloons with water, and I'd make the kids stand on this tablecloth. I'd say, all right, I'm going to tie a dog. You tie a dog. Just do exactly what I do. And of course, you know, you're doing this thing. The water explodes and soaks the poor kid. So, okay, all right. And then, well, why couldn't you tie a dog? Like, well, because, you know, it's full of water. Okay. So we empty it of water, and then I hand them the empty balloon. I say, okay, now tie the dog. I'm like,
wow.
Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
This is the Christian education model. Like, namely, we need a fast. We need to say, all right, I need some space where I give up my screen, my dopamine addiction. And that needs to be fairly radical, I think. What you can do when you're in an enclosed community is probably different than what you can do when you're in the world. But some kind of intentional thinking about what that fast looks like. But knowing the fast isn't the end. We need to empty ourselves of the addiction, like emptying the balloon of the water. But then we need to fill it with the right stuff. We need to fill it with the breath of the Holy Spirit at some level. Right? And so what's that filling it? Well, that involves creating again our capacity to fill ourselves up with extended experiences of communion and beauty.
I love it.
So let's go outside. Let's go for a hike. Let's read stories together. Let's watch something extended together. Let's listen to beautiful music together. Let's learn to sing. And I think in part, maybe the first step is learning to do it yourself. Let go of the phone and then work on singing. Is that going to be
literally work on singing?
Literally, just sing.
I love how you see your message here isn't just to create a void.
Right.
Let's take the fractured attention spans and fill it with actual entertainment.
Right.
I mean, this is the solution isn't to say let's remove all that you're looking for when you're looking for quality entertainment.
Right.
It's put the quality back. So you guys literally sit around and sing.
Sing. Memorize poems.
What does that look like when you're like, how do you encourage college kids? Because again, back in the 90s, I would actually do this. I had my guitar.
Right.
It was a way of picking up girls, right?
Right.
This was the whole mating ritual on campus. Out strumming.
So the first thing you do is, the first thing we do with the kids is we send them out for 3 weeks in a backpacking trip. And as it turns out, when you're out on a backpacking trip for 3 weeks, you just have to create things to do together, like sing and various things. But when they come back to campus, then you're like, okay, well, now we need to create habits. So our freshmen, the first 30 minutes of the day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, just sing. They gather together and they sing, whether they sight read, whether they don't sight read, we're going to teach them to sing. And does it sound good on the first day? No, it actually sounds pretty bad. But that's okay, right? Because the point is you first learn to sing, and then we can start listening and appreciating other great music. You know, then by all means, like, we're not saying that you can't listen to other great art. In fact, but you're better able to appreciate great art. Having learned to make it. Our students are going to memorize poetry, and they'll sit around. And so then at the campfires, we're going to sing around the campfire. And we'll have a little bonfire out at the dorm and sing and then recite poetry and tell stories. And that deepens the experience to be able then to listen to, you know, things that we would describe as great art, as great entertainment. But you're developing first in yourself a habit for participating in it. And then that habit of participation lets you read a really long book or watch a really long movie and think deeply about it and enter deeply into it.
You know what I love about this approach too? And I encountered this with your students. They were seriously academic, right? And you could divide the segments of your curriculum between here's the academic and here's the experiential.
Right.
And yet I got the sense in the playfulness of their approach to academics that even the academic part served the end of I want to actually learn how to enjoy life more.
Right.
You're like when I encountered those kids after that commencement speech who came up and we were hanging out and they're reciting Chaucer in Middle English to me. And they're like, they're giddy. And I'm looking at them thinking, you studied so much harder than me. That's one. But two, you studied so you could expand your capacity to have fun.
Right.
This quote from Chesterton, I love this. This will resonate with you. It might reasonably be maintained that the true object of all human life is play. Earth is a task garden. Heaven is a playground. How cool is that? So yeah, there's something playgroundish about the experience
right.
that you're making, and that like, you know, if I could have that in mind with forming myself, forming my kids, with anybody in education or forming the next generation, that the goal is like, guys, we're trying to help you enjoy life more, frankly.
Right. Yeah, Ratzinger even says this about worship, that where you want to look for, where the model for worship is, he says maybe we should first look at play.
Really?
Yes. And
man,
so in
cool
Spirit of
the
Liturgy,
that?
First look at play. And why? Well, because again, the thing that's supposed to happen when we think, it's not supposed to be just a dry recitation of facts. Mm. When we go through Christian life, it's not supposed to be just a rote following of memorized rules. Mm. It's supposed to be this participating joy in the life of true goodness and beauty that is actually God himself, right, that he allows us to participate in that. So it's only, you know, when we start thinking about, no, thinking is like I'm a scientist in a lab and I'm grinding through facts. That's what thinking is.
Mm.
Christianity, oh, that's following all the rules so I can make it to heaven. That's what being a Christian is. Like, no. The human being was put in a garden.
Mm.
Now, he had tasks. He was supposed to till and keep. But at some level, he was told to play, to enjoy, to delight in his wife, in his God, in himself, in the garden. And so Christian education needs to be returning that capacity for joy, for things that people don't take joy in anymore. Worship, song, thinking, writing, communicating. That's what we need to give back.
That's got chills. Really. And there's some people watching who are thinking, well, but I'm just not into that. I'm not into classical music. I'm not into poetry. I'm not even into a long movie. And isn't that okay? And gosh, I would say, no, it's not. I mean, like we need to work on that part of us to expand the capacity.
Right.
It challenges me to work on it too, because I don't do this enough. But when I was dating my wife, one of her great tests to see if she wanted to keep the relationship going, she's like, hey, let's listen to Beethoven's Ninth, not just the one segment, but the whole thing. And she's like watching me to see, do I have the capacity to sit there in silence and listen to Beethoven's Ninth? I had no idea I was being tested. Thank you, Lord, that I successfully passed the test. But it's like, we think we can judge Beethoven's Ninth. No, Beethoven's Ninth judges us if we have no capacity to sit down and be quiet and enjoy it for 40 minutes.
C.S. Lewis is really clear on that. The great things of great art, great things in nature, great landscapes, right? Yeah, those are, we're measuring ourselves against them, not measuring them against us.
Yes.
Right? So if you see this incredible display of the Grand Tetons up in northern Wyoming, you're like, eh.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you.
This is more about you, right? Exactly. And it's not like God needed to work on those mountains better. Like, no, there's something here. Similarly, for great music. Now, again, are there tastes in art and various things? Yes. But the constant testament of Christian culture is human beings are made for sustained experience of spiritual joy.
Mm.
And things like listening to a sustained piece of music or engaging in a sustained conversation. Those are foretastes. Those are dispositions to the heavenly life and the communion of saints that we're going to.
Wow. The danger, again, we can experience atrophy of those parts of the spirit, right? This is a quote that I ripped from studying some of your stuff, from Darwin, of all people, who was, you know, not right about everything, but not that that's a whole other show.
That's right.
I actually believe in evolution in the Bible, those things go together, right. But Darwinism, that it could happen without God, no. But the guy was honest, right, and pursued truth as he knew it with great devotion. And he wrote this: "My mind seems to have become a kind of machine for grinding general laws out of large collections of facts. Gosh, when I work too hard, even in ministry, right. I feel the same thing. If I'm not careful, to enjoy life, right? But why should this have caused the atrophy of that part of the brain alone on which the higher tastes? So he recognizes it's higher. Depend. I cannot conceive. A man with a mind more highly organized or better constituted than mine would not, I suppose, have thus suffered. And if I had to live my life again, I would have made a rule to read some poetry and listen to some music at least once every week, or perhaps, for perhaps the parts of my brain now atrophied would thus have been kept active through use. The loss of these tastes," so he experienced his own dopamine of like more and more information, right. Just like it's flatline. "The loss of these tastes is a loss of happiness and may possibly be injurious to the intellect." So it impacts the ability to pursue truth, and more probably to the moral character by enfeebling the emotional part of our nature. That is profound, man. That's profound. What do you do when you feel like that's lost?
Right.
And yeah, I've tried to listen to Beethoven's Ninth. I've tried to watch a full-length movie. I tried to read a book. Nothing's happening. Yeah, what do you say to the person for whom that's so dang hard? Like, what do we have to? We're digging deep. Where do we dig? What are we trying to pull up? Is it being comfortable with boredom for a while? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Like, guide me through. You guide tons of people through this process.
Well, so that's when Adam and Eve go into the wilderness. The first thing they're told is it's going to hurt. Mm. The first thing when they go from fig leaves to the wilderness, the first thing God does is put them in animal skins, which is, so something had to die.
Mm.
And to be wrapped in animal skins as opposed to be a plant means you're vulnerable.
Mm.
You have sensation, you feel, it hurts, and you'll die. It's itchy, right? Mm. This is, you're not camouflaged, you're not invulnerable, you're not sort of a passive plant that gets to pretend like everything's good. It's gonna hurt. It's gonna be sweat of your brow, there's gonna be toil. All right, you're like, well, don't oversell it. I'm so excited now. Like, no, okay. But I think God says, like, look, this is where it starts, right? That there's going to be some kind of, Thomas Aquinas puts it like this: all learning hurts, all knowledge is joy.
Ooh, I love that. So don't recoil when you feel the initial pain.
Yeah, there's going to be some pain.
Expect the pain.
Right, you're like, oh gosh, I'm bored. Like, yep. Or, oh gosh, this hurts. Yep. So don't jump full in. Say like, okay, look, because I'm going to do this, I'm going to listen to all of Bach's St. Matthew's Passion 3 times in a row without moving in a dark room. Okay, maybe that's not the best way to jump in, right? Maybe jump in by, I'm going to get a plant and I'm going to grow the plant.
Mm.
And when I grow the plant, I'm going to sing a song. Or I'm going to teach my kids nursery rhymes.
Mm.
Or I'm going to say, look, the first hour I wake up and the last hour of my day, I'm not going to be on a screen.
I like that. First hour and last hour.
First hour, last hour, not on the screen.
There's a starting point.
And what am I going to do during that hour, right? So the first thing, empty the balloon, right? But then what do I do, right? I'll probably get itchy, right? I'll probably struggle, but say some prayers, sing a song, read a newspaper, right? Mm. If you have a newspaper, right? Something, just look, reading Calvin and Hobbes can be a great start.
Yeah.
Right? We don't have to start with high art.
Mm.
We need to start with good things. And by giving our attention to even something as, which I think, you know, Calvin and Hobbes cartoons, again, from the 90s, little comic strips that are insightful, that are good, that practice the development of attention.
It's okay to lift a 5-pound weight when you start.
That's right. Totally we're going to go there, right?
Yeah.
This is where we start. And that's with the students, right? You know, that they're going to read some heavy stuff, but we're also going to do some silly stuff, right? We're going to be out in the outdoors and play silly games or sing camp songs, right? Part of this is culturally we had habits like this developed. And we just need to put ourselves back. And humans create things to fill those spaces when we're not numbing ourselves to it. The thing to remember, and this is, I think, important for Christians. So St. Thomas Aquinas, when he argues about whether Christ has a human mind, the proof he gives for Christ has a human mind is that in Mark's gospel, it says that our Lord wonders.
Boy, that's cool.
He says, and Aquinas says, look, here's the point. Only humans, only souls and bodies wonder. Because in wonder, you experience the sort of halfway point of having something kind of and not having it all the way.
Wow.
I see this as worth knowing and would be good to know, and I don't know it. And I wonder, and I can wonder at bad things, I can wonder at good things, but I have this experience of wonder that leads me to pursue joy, right? Wow. That's what he says. That leads to the joy. So when we talk about putting on the mind of Christ, part of what Christ did is he came down as a little baby and he came down into a manger to have experiences of wonder and delight, to show us that we could have experiences of wonder and delight as we follow him. And that can be little things.
Wow.
Looking at a flower, singing a song to your wife badly,
yeah.
Telling a joke to your kids. These things are all this sort of poetic mode of life that's disposing us to more and more give our attention to things that are authentic entertainment. And that authentic entertainment disposes us to prayerful contemplation.
Wow. Praise God. Tell us about Our Lady of Champion.
Okay.
You're one of the only people I know who's like in leadership in the Catholic space who's excited about this, who's hearing that message that I love this place. I did a show on it with EWTN years ago. It's such a humble apparition site, the only approved Marian apparition in the United States, that no one's talking about. It's such a critical message for education and human formation for all of us right now. But yeah, run with that.
So,
talk to us about the story.
So I have a special love for Lady of Champion because Bishop David Ricken, who was the one who oversaw the approval of the apparition site. And he oversaw the approval.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin, 150 years after it happened. But he's the one who's ushered it in, worked with the Vatican, has it approved now. But he's also the one who founded Wyoming Catholic College.
Oh, how cool.
And so there's this already this interesting link there.
Yeah.
But when Bishop Ricken founded Wyoming Catholic College, he did it, and everyone told him he was nuts. Right? There's not a Catholic high school in the state of Wyoming. And so he's going to found a Catholic college in Wyoming. They're like, "What? Why are you doing this?" And he said, "I don't know, but Our Lady wants it." And so he founds this college, and this college from the beginning has this thing, we're going to fast from our cell phones, we're going to go out into the mountains, we're going to have this wilderness experience, we're going to memorize poetry, and then with that human disposition, we're going to go do the study. He goes, "Well, I guess Mary wants this, like this is what she wants." Wow. And he founds the college, and he's immediately sent, the first year we're founded, he's immediately sent to Green Bay. And the thing he does is approve the Marian apparition.
That's cool.
But the message that Our Lady gave 150 years ago in Champion, Wisconsin, she appears as the Queen of Heaven and she tells Adele, gather the youth in this wilderness and teach them for their salvation. Now, 150 years ago, that message meant something different, right? It's talking to immigrants living in the Wisconsin mountain or the Wisconsin forests, saying, gather them and teach them for education. But Our Lady of Champion likes puns, and I think this is important to note. When Adele was growing up in Belgium, before she immigrated to the United States, she made a pledge to be a nun in Champion, Belgium. She's going to consecrate her life to be a nun in Champion. Wow. And then her family moves to America, and she's in utter distress. Because she's promised Our Lady she's going to be a nun in Champion. Now she's not going to be able to do this.
I didn't know that.
And they moved to America, and they named the town Champion. And then Our Lady appears and she becomes a missionary educator there.
Incredible.
And so what she thought was being told and what the context of the time were different, but there's a continuity. So too, I think, for Our Lady of Champion. 150 years ago, 1 year after Lourdes, when Our Lady appears, it's educate the immigrant children out here in Wisconsin. And the sign that she appeared was the miraculous stopping of the largest fire at that time in North American history that just went up all over Wisconsin, and it stopped around the boundary of the shrine and didn't burn.
Literally right there.
Right there. Stops. 150 years later, there's a different kind of raging fire. And that raging fire, I think, is the dopamine culture that is consuming our youth, our attention, our lives. And Our Lady wanted 150 years to go by before her message of calling us into the wilderness to be taught for our salvation was proclaimed in the United States. Boy. But that's our mission right now.
How awesome.
And the fire we're stopping is this dopamine culture. And the way we do it is the way the church has always done it, going into the wilderness, fasting, praying, working on our attention, and filling our lives with joy.
High five to that. Incredible. How many students at Wyoming Catholic?
Just under 200.
Small place.
Small place. We have another 1,000 that come through every year into the wilderness. We lead outdoor trips with core expeditions.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we take another 1,000 out.
On the video.
Right.
And you start freshman year with how many weeks in the wilderness?
Three weeks.
The freshmen go out.
Three weeks. No phones, up in the mountains. They come back. They'll spend an additional 6 weeks in the outdoors over the course of their time.
And then how much time in doing equestrian, like your horseback riding?
It's a semester of horsemanship, really working with the horse, really working with those animal skins with which we're...
I love how you summed up what universities do. It forms those kids. Like what you're doing there is not just for those few hundred kids.
Right.
And it spreads a charism
right. For
the formation of a church. And really good Catholic universities, I could see them doing that in their own ways. I'm a Franciscan grad.
Right.
There's a Franciscan charism that's spilled way outside the university. Monsignor Shea is doing great stuff in North Dakota. It's like spreading out. I'm so grateful for what you're doing, not for those kids, but because I think really the church needs to hear what's coming out of Wyoming Catholic for the sake of everybody. There's something special there, and I'm grateful for the charism he's placed at that place, and in you very clearly, and in your mind, in your approach to reality. So thanks for shining that for us all today. Oh, man.
Well, thanks for having me here, Chris. And it is just, again, I'm convinced this is the message Our Lady has given to America, and we are all called to respond in our own ways, and just so excited to be able to share it.
Amen. Our Lady of Champion.
Pray for us.
Amen. All right, friends, so you've watched this episode. Now do it. Spend some time today. Seriously, you're worth it. You're worth this time on real soul-feeding entertainment, a good book, a full-length movie, a poem, sitting down in quiet and listening to Firebird or Beethoven's Ninth. Gather your kids around and do that. They might get a little bit bored, a little bit squirmy. It'll expand your soul. But first, watch the very end of this. I'll share with you that little clip I grabbed after giving the commencement speech at Wyoming Catholic last year, of young adults reciting Chaucer in Middle English. It's really cool. Love you guys. See you next time.
Okay,
I got
a couple lines from Chaucer in Old English.
All right,
go
for it. One an opera with his sword assault, the drought of March hath passed into the rota, and bathed every vein in switch liqueur, of which virtue in engender it is the floor. One Zephyr's echo with its sweaty breath, in spirit hath in every halted head, the tender corpus and the young Asana, hath in the ram is half a course thereon. And smaller folders mocking melody that slept in all the nicht with open ear. Since cricket them and natur in here commages, then longing folk to go on pilgrimages, and homerous forces taken strangers rondas to fairer holy coot and sundry launders. And specially from every shearer's ender of England to Canterbury they wender. A holy, blissful martyr for to seek, that him hath opened one that they were seeking.